This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Butzianis, no call! Score!
Salamidi for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket!
Trimboli, what vision!
Math blasts.
Yes! That's it!
Miljevic.
Kristopoulos, beautiful ball!
Here's Bozanic.
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR Football Nation Radio.
It's that time of the week again, G2.
Good evening, G1.
A special guest and someone both of us have been really looking forward to getting on, FNR for a number of reasons. Yes, he's been on before, but we haven't had a chance to grill him and to get to the very core of the DNA that makes Peter Catholis the cat. Yeah. Now, I've given it away. It is the cat. It's Catholis. He was born way back in 1961 when men were really men.
Were they?
He was born in southern Greece in a place called Messini. Played much of his junior football when he came to Australia for, I think, Canterbury.
Canterbury.
Canterbury. Cigare, yeah. Don't say that. He arrived in Australia with the rest of his family, I suppose, as a young bloke in 1970, when Australia was a very different place, a very different country.
And, I'm sure he'll tell us all about that.
And within 7 years of that time, he made his debut as a semi-pro for the Canterbury Marrickville Club
Canterbury.
At the age, at the very tender age of 16. Peter Catholis, welcome to the Pioneers.
How are you guys?
Thank you. Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure to have you on the show.
Now, G2, George Kotsanis, always takes our guests way back. So are you ready to go all the way back, Peter Catholis?
Yes, mate. My memory's still
right. Well, get ready. Here we go.
While you've still got your memory and it's still fresh, what is your very, very first football memory?
Made football memory. I mean, it depends how old. I remember, going to Greek school as a young kid and wanting to play soccer, and my parents wouldn't let me go and play soccer. They wouldn't, play association football. I remember that those moments. Other football memories. Going watching Parramatta Lennox back in 70. I think 76, 75, 76 with my old man. Those things spring to mind.
You remember going to Wentworth Park to see Panalini, do you?
I do, mate. I do. I remember watching Rudy Narvi.
Oh, gee. They were great times, and there were some great players that came through. I remember young Tony Muglis. I remember Billy Smith, Jimmy Pearson. Great players from the past of Panhellenic. And Billy Vrolics was my coach when I was at Panhellenic. They were fantastic times, great characters. Johnny Demos was another great character who, made a start and made his way at Panhellenic. Didn't quite go as far as he could have done. Probably, I suppose, because he loved to party.
but you had
a different commitment. You loved the game. In fact, you've loved it forever and a day, and you still love it to this very day. Mate, just taking you back, when you were in Greece, did you get a chance to steep yourself or soak up all the pothosferisti? No. How do you say it?
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. Did you really fall in love with the game there, or was it when you came to Australia?
No, mate. I was back in Greece. So the days back then when I was a young kid, we used to, we used to play in the streets. We used to play in the dirt fields, wherever we could find a piece
boots
of
or no boots.
I don't know what we used to wear there. No boots, definitely no boots. The parents couldn't afford boots back in the day. I mean, we couldn't afford a soccer ball. That's the way it all began. And when we came to Australia, it just continued and continued and continued. You either love it or you don't. And once I met that soccer ball, we never, fell apart.
You fell in love.
Yeah. What were your first boots? Come on. If you're talking about love, you will probably have your first pair of boots.
Puma. I was always a Puma man back in the day.
You guys in Sydney must have had more money than us guys in Melbourne if you went straight to the Puma.
Oh, mate. You had to have the extra couple of bucks to go Puma. What colour were they, Peter?
Definitely black.
Muppet.
No, there was only black.
None of these fancy coloured crap they wear.
Mate, Peter, let me ask you a question. If you had a chance to run on today, right? Peter Katholis runs onto the pitch. He's going to make his entrance. Yeah, he's going to make his entrance at, say, for example, Allianz, as it was, or Amy Park. What coloured boots would you wear today?
Definitely black.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought you'd go orange, man.
Mate, if I had to go for a colour, I'd go blue, but that's about it.
dark blue, yeah? Navy blue.
So, black or blue, that's it.
I love it. Bravo, that's very good.
All right, take us through those early days at Canterbury, when you started wagging Greek school instead of going to Greek dancing and you started playing soccer.
I played at Canterbury Association for a couple of years, and you know, when my parents gave me the go-ahead to go and play a bit of soccer.
Yeah.
And then I was coached at under-16s by Walter Tamandel, which was a very, very
Tamandel,
famous... Walter Tamandel, a famous import from Austria, I think, I believe. And he actually took the first grade of Canterbury Miracle the year after, and he basically gave me my first run into the... to the first grade squad for Canterbury.
Gee, Walter Tamandel, Uncle Joe Vlasic, Les Scheinflug, they were some of the greats of that period who were playing either for Prague. Who was Walter Tamandel playing for? Can you remember? Was it Prague or was it...
I'm not sure, but they
Ugal, maybe.
He was a great soccer player, and he was one of the best imports to come to Australia. But
what sort of an influence did he have on you, Pete?
Look, the thing for me, it was as a young kid, obviously being very, very young, obviously he spotted that I did have some talent. Otherwise, he wouldn't have drafted me into a first-grade squad. But it was a big confidence booster for me because someone that knew his football well and, he chose me to, play for his team as early as that age was a big honour for me. I can't recall what he told me, but whatever he told me, I definitely listened to because I sponged everything from everyone.
tell me about Mum and Dad. What do they think their son is going to go and play first team football at 16?
Mate, let me tell you, we had a really hard time because look, my parents wanted me to go to uni and all that razzmatazz. And they didn't want me to be a soccer player because they thought, soccer players don't earn enough money.
Correct.
And it's until I started at that young age getting paid for a win bonus and I was bringing some money home, they thought, oh, okay, this is pretty good.
It's a bit different now. It's a bit different.
So way back then, what was a win bonus worth to you, buddy?
Mate, $100 or, it was 60, 80, 100 or something like that along those lines.
But that was good money.
All cash, of course.
Hey, but we're talking.
Yeah, no, it's good money.
Mid-70s or 80s? What are we talking about? Mid-70s?
1977.
Yeah, no, it's all money. Right. It's all right.
And it's cash, which Greeks love
cash.
Yeah.
So...
My first game was at Garside Park against Sydney, Croatia. And I remember I had to mark... Adi Abonyi was playing for Croatia back in the day. So it was a huge Ampol Cup. It was Ampol Cup
pre-season game, was it?
Pre-season tournament, and how good was that?
How did you go?
Oh, it went pretty good.
we'll get him on and ask him if he remembers.
That's great. I love it.
Probably wouldn't remember.
Probably not. So that was. So did you actually play in as a defender, or was it just defensive midfielder? How did you end up on Audi?
Nah, mate, I was never a defender.
Yeah.
Too creative.
I was playing in a central position.
Yeah.
I think Adi Abonyi was playing a little bit further back those days.
Okay.
He was getting on a bit.
Yeah.
And so I think he was back more in midfield, but...
That's how it happened.
Good old days. I was a young spring chicken, and he was, one of the oldies.
That's good. With the Ampol Cup, in Melbourne, I'm obviously a local boy here. I went for years and years, and it was always double headers and big crowds, depending on obviously who the four were playing, the four participants on the day. What was it like in Sydney? Were the crowds as big as they were down here, or was it as popular?
It was huge. I remember Garside Park, that stadium was packed.
Yeah.
It would have been about 8,000 people in that little stadium there. It was huge.
Standing room only.
Because, you know, those days, that was a big match. It was like the Greeks and the Croatians back then. And, it was a big crowd, I remember.
I remember Pratton Park. I remember Garside Park. I remember Leichhardt Oval. I remember the grounds that really resonated, whether it was ES Marks Field when Olympic were playing or Panhellenic were playing, you'd always have terrific crowds. And Wentworth Park was always chock-a-block, as was the sports ground. Did you play at the sports ground?
Mate, I must have played a couple of games. I think Sydney Olympic in the Doherty era, we played one or two games in there. But that's about it. I mean, I played in the sports ground, I think, with the Australian youth team or whatever. But, only a couple of games here and there. But still good to play there. It was good.
Tell us how you found yourself at St George in the early days of the NSL. How did that happen?
Well, you mentioned a guy, Uncle Joe Glasses. That was the guy that recommended me to St George.
Yep.
And he was my state coach, and he basically, that was I went to St George, and that was a really, really good grounding for me. It was either going to Palani playing youth team or going to first grade St George. It was no brainer for me, and I went there, and that was a great decision because, you know, I played first grade, I played first grade straight away, and that was a really, really. Really, really important stage in development of my career back in those days.
Was that Barton Park?
Barton Park, correct.
and did you have a duck when the planes came over, Peter?
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
Did you have to duck when the planes were taking off from the airport?
Pretty close.
So was Frank in charge in the early days? Frank Arrow?
No, Frank Arrow wasn't there. I think I was there under Raul Blanco.
Oh, Raul Blanco, wow.
There was another guy, there was a Hungarian coach in his first year there, then Raul Blanco was the year after. So yeah.
Tell us about Raul, mate, because he has a terrific reputation for identifying talent and giving them the sort of information they needed take the next step.
Raul Blanco was probably one of my best coaches that I've had. He basically shaped a lot of my play. He was a midfielder also. He offered me great because we discussed things as a midfielder, what he expected me to do, what I should do. And look, as a young player, it's invaluable to be coached by someone that was a good midfielder, and to be passed on. Good points or refining points as a midfielder, which I took on board. He was one of my great coaches that I still talk to and I embrace. He's a great man.
Yeah. So obviously he, as well as coaching the team, because of the similarities perhaps in your styles and the positions, he obviously did a lot of one-on-one with you. I would imagine a lot of mentoring, a lot of.
Yeah. Look. Yeah. We used to stay back and we used to me and him. We used to practice. Hitting 40-meter passes, left foot and right foot.
Yep.
And we used to challenge each other. Who could be more accurate? It was amazing. But little things like that, refine you as a player, refine you as an athlete. You get on the field, and when you try that 30, 40-meter pass, or you try to beat one or two players, or have a shot, it becomes second nature. You just do it automatically. So those things were very important.
Peter Katholis is our guest on The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Katsanis. And one of the things that we've discovered is that Raul Blanco was a very important key in the development of the young Peter Katholis. But Peter, I'm also reminded by a couple of times I've heard you speak that you also loved watching the football on TV. You learned an awful lot from watching others do what they did.
Well, that's exactly right. Look, they talk about, these days about academies and, you know, this and that. But look, where you learn, you know, your trade is basically playing football and working it out, getting out of tight situations. Look, by the time I was 16, 17, I just needed refining. I didn't really need to be told, you know, what to do or how to do it, or to be taught techniques. That was already, you know, that was already there. I was just basically given direction, you know, about my particular position. And but, you know, you're right, George. I mean, I watched great players and I watched the way they played, and I tried to emulate them when I was, you know, when I was on the park.
Which players, Pete, had a, when you were watching or reading or whatever it was, which players had that influence?
Yeah, look, Platini, guys like Platini, he was a, you know, good passer of the ball, you know, good attacking player. Obviously, Maradona, we, you know, I love Maradona as a soccer player. But Platini, you know, guys like Zidane, you know, number 10s, all the number 10s.
What do you make of a couple of guys called Messi and Ronaldo?
Yeah, look, I love Messi. Messi is a great footballer. You know, the ability to beat players, that's, you know, it's magic. Ronaldo, different type of player, but, you know, he's an athlete. You know, he scores goals. He's got the knack of knowing where to be at the right time. A lot of confidence. Yeah, both great players. But, you know, Messi, for me, you know, definitely stands out.
Peter, do you believe, like Georgie, that you've got to work at your game, at your craft? Did you love getting in there on the pitch and working something out until it was perfect?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd practice things that, you know, I wanted to refine. You know, if it was either passing or, you know, shooting or, you know, taking players on. You know, these are things that I don't think enough players sort of practice, to, you know, repetition until you get it right.
Yeah.
If you're passionate and you want to be better and better and better, I think that's what, you know, that's what you do, and that's what, you know, a lot of the great players, I think, do to become better players. Yeah. They don't just sit there watching and thinking that's going to happen, you know, automatically.
It doesn't just happen. No.
It just doesn't happen.
No. Con Butsianis has said to me time and time and time again, if he had a chance, he would get out there to some of these elite A-League clubs and show some of their strikers how to take a dead ball, a free kick, because he reckons so many of them just don't have the right technique. Are you seeing and saying that too?
We are very good friends with Compagnanos. We talk a lot about the current state of players, and that's one of the topics that we discuss all the time. I couldn't agree with him more. Some of the players, they don't know how to kick a ball properly. The technique, they have never been taught how to kick properly. That is true. I do agree totally. It's not only taking free kicks, but actually passing the ball. You know, the technique of passing inside, outside of the foot. You know, look, some of the players are really, really lack that technique and ability. Definitely, yeah. There is a place for players that know how to do these properly to teach that craft to not only A-League players, obviously, in, you know, Australian national players.
I'm sure we'll get there. Don't worry. We're building up to it. We know where you're going with that. But
yeah,
let's stay on track before I let you. No, that's right. We'll let you loose. He's going to let you loose later. Don't worry.
He's going to ask you now, how is it you left St. George? Where did you go after that?
Well, I'll tell you the story. It was incredible, incredible, George.
It better be.
It was. I played at St. George versus Sydney Olympic, and I scored the goal that sent Olympic to the second division.
Ah, you got them relegated.
And then what happened the year after? St. George got relegated, and guess what? I've gone to Sydney Olympic. They wanted me at Sydney Olympic, so that's what...
They forgave you quickly, didn't they?
That's what happened.
You must have been very lucky, because that's a big thing to forgive, the man that got them relegated. But obviously they came back straight up, so...
Yeah, they came back straight away.
Tell us about the players that made a difference in those days for you at St. George and also at Sydney Olympic.
Look, at St. George, look, I played with one of my, you know, one of early heroes, which was Rudy Narby. I played that year together in my first year. That was fantastic. Roy Cotton was another that he was an England youth international that came across. Nigel Groom, another guy that came from England. He played with us. Peter Hensman, Phil O'Connor. I remember Phil O'Connor that passed away.
Yes, great play, you know, great left foot.
Yeah, some great players back in the day. It's in the Olympic, you know, with Gary Meyer, guys like Marshall Soper.
Marshall Soper was one of my favourites, mate.
Mate, he was. He was a great striker.
Why was he so different? He was a different personality.
He was very different, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell us about him, Pete.
Well, mate, look, the guy would, you know, he was quick. He was deceptively quick, but he had an ability to basically head a ball, you know, score a goal with his head, score a goal with the left foot, score a goal with the right foot. he was a great striker, and he put himself in the fire. He wouldn't be scared to get in the tackle or, you know.
Yeah, we've seen the footage of him tackling.
Yeah.
But he was different though, wasn't he? Was he lazy or just laconic? What do you reckon? Off the field.
Oh, he knows.
Well, he was a strange character. I used to get along with okay with Marshall. He was different. He was, you know, he grew up in I think Newcastle or out the outskirts of Newcastle.
Mm.
He was a different sort of killer of fish, and you had to approach him differently. You know,
yep.
He was a quiet bloke. He was in his own world.
Until the terraces would yell holler for a marshal. And he would come and jump start the attack. He was fantastic.
He was a great player.
He was great.
Now, you played with another bloke just alongside you for a long, long period of time that Georgie adores, Mr. Raskopoulos. Tell us about young
Rasko,
Pete.
Yes. Tell us about Rasko.
Well, Rasko, you know, we sort of never saw eye to eye for a long time.
Really?
Why is that? He wanted to take the free kicks. I didn't think, you know, we had the same ability.
And you told him, right?
On another note, he was, you know, he was a good player. He was a good midfielder. We complemented each other quite well. And, we played many years together. You know, we did very well together. Tommy Docherty had us two. He played 4-2-4, and we were the two midfielders. We ran our backsides off back and up and forward in the middle of the park there. And those days were fantastic. But look, we complemented each other very well.
Speaking of different cats, Mr. Docherty, come on, he was different.
He was definitely a character. Look, he gave me the biggest accolade ever. I mean, as a player, you know, he said that I was the best young player he ever coached, and you know, I always respect him for that. He also made me captain. He said, I remember a session he said to me, you know, Pete, he goes, Cat, I want you to be my captain. He goes, I want you to wear number 4. I said, Doc, that can't happen. I need to wear number 10.
Yeah.
I'll be captain, but, you know, I've got to wear number 10.
Yeah, so you won that argument easily?
Yes, I did.
Very good, very good.
Tell us about Kalanzis.
Oh, look, he's an incredible story there with Chrissy. Yeah, Chrissy, he was playing in the under-16s for Sydney Olympic Juniors, and we had an injury during the week. One of the players got injured on the left wing, and what happened, Doc went to watch Saturday. He went to watch Chrissy play. And he thought he thought how good he was. And he next day, well, guess what? He was playing. You know, he called him for first grade, and he was playing first grade.
He went from Queen's Park, where they were playing with 16s, to the main game.
To the main game.
How fantastic, eh?
It was amazing. I mean, what a story. But then, you know, after that, you know, I mean, he never looked back. Chris was a great talent, and he showed that through the years. A fantastic player.
At what stage during your Olympic career did you start to get some national recognition?
Sydney Olympic, the first year, my Sydney Olympic year was 1981. I mean, I ended up, being nearly the player of the year. I ended up runner-up. So I think everyone realised, my potential. I think Doc was fighting at that stage so I should be included in the World Cup squad. Goodenough picked me in that World Cup squad. Unfortunately, he never played me.
Did you train under Rudy Goodenough?
Yeah, I did. He was the 1981, the qualifying squad. I was in that squad that went to New Zealand.
How did you find him?
Well, he was he was different. I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time with him, obviously, because I came into that World Cup squad the last few weeks.
Yeah.
But he was, he shouted a lot, and he preferred players that really were, I think, tough defending players. I think he was more conscious about defending than actually. Yeah. Going forward, because at the time we had some really good strikers. I think Eddie Kurcevic, he was in that squad, and Kenny Bowden and Phil O'Connor. There were some great, attacking players, but he was very cautious about defending, and I think that was our downfall.
Mm. All right, so it didn't go well for Australia, let alone for you. 82 was a big year, though. Tell us about 82.
Well, 82, I showed basically what Goodenough. His errors, because if he played me 81, guess what? We might have gone in the World Cup, because I absolutely killed the opposition. I mean, I was just playing football, free football, and I was just, I was enjoying my football. But, I showed my ability as a footballer, what I can do. And there was no fear. I was 22 years of age. There was no fear of anyone. I just believed I was the best, and I just win every game thinking, I'm here to rule the roost today.
A lot of people agree with you, Peter, because they named you the player of the year, the Australian player of the year in 82.
Well, that's it. I think I won most of the awards. I think it was four or five awards, and I think I've cleaned up that year, including the Soccer Action TV.
Ooh, mate. What didn't you do for Soccer Action? You had your own corner. You called it Cat's Corner. You also did something with Soccer Weekly, and you also did something for the Greek Herald, I'm sure, especially when you were playing for Olympic.
Yeah, look, I got into the to that part of the world very early. maybe that was that went against me, because writing a column at 22 years.
You need an opinion.
exactly. You've got to express your opinion. Not everyone's going to agree with you.
Did you cop flack from the opposition? You must have copped some flack from the opposition.
Oh, look, I didn't care. I really didn't care. I didn't really care. I just said it as I saw it.
Yeah. But did they try? Did they try and talk about it during, try and trash talk the column or you because of it?
Not really. I mean, I had players that, would give me stick during the game and, about different situations. I can't, I don't want to say anything now because it was not very sportsmanship. But you had to hold your own.
After 35 years, surely you could tell us one or two. This is why we have the program, so you can tell us one or two. There must have been. You don't tell us what they
He's
said.
He's got a couple safe ones.
There surely must have been a couple of guys that were lippy.
I had a guy by the name of McMillan.
Arthur.
He was playing for Preston.
Oh, Georgie.
He said to me, "Son, today I'm not here to play football." He goes, "I'm here to kick you up the back and break your legs."
Yeah.
And I turned around and said to him, "Mate, well, let's see who's going to break who's first."
Oh, gee.
And that was, conversations like that. But that's they thought they could, threaten the. The ball playing, they thought, that we ball players were, softies. But unfortunately, he picked on the wrong bloke because there's no soft there, mate.
Our pioneer this week is Peter Catholis. We're going to find out when we come back from this break exactly who was refereeing the game and why didn't they protect our cat?
Welcome back on Thursday night. You're on the Pioneers with George Danikian, the former Panhellenic and Sydney Olympic, easy for you to say, superstar. And online, we've got
a real superstar.
A real superstar.
Thank you.
Sydney Olympic legend, Peter Catholis. Now, we were just talking about Georgie McMillan trying to psych you out. And I'm tipping at some point he would have kicked lumps out of you because Georgie McMillan got stuck into nearly everyone when they played against Preston.
Mate, you remember.
Oh, yeah.
I do remember. And I was on the terraces and I was scared of George McMillan. That's how frightening he was. Now, you got some recognition with the Socceroos, as we said earlier, and then you played in that international tournament, or you played against England under Frank Arrock. You played a couple of games when England came out in 83. What are your memories of playing against that England team and young Frank?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, and maybe you don't have this story, but I played my first game at Sydney Cricket Ground. I was man of the match.
Yeah.
Robson, the coach, raving on about Peter Catholis. Next minute, I've got half a game in Brisbane. The next minute in Melbourne, I don't even get a 5 minutes. I asked Frank Arrock, I said, Frank, what's going on?
Yeah.
He asked me, Peter, he goes, your mind is on making money and chasing beautiful women. I said, what are you talking about? It was incredible. But look, the truth is, Frank Arrock never really appreciated my ability. And I still tell him, if I ever saw him, and I still tell him on Facebook, because the thing is, when he asked me to come back to St. George and I said no, when I was at Sydney Olympic, and I've just won everything at Sydney Olympic,
yeah.
And he took it personally,
yep.
Because I didn't go back to St. George, and that was really, really sad, because it shouldn't be. It was nothing personal against Frank Arrock, but he took it personally. And then when he took over the national team, guess what? The first guy to go was Peter Catholis.
Yeah.
That's the true story.
Yeah. So the following year, when the touring teams came out, Nottingham Forest, Man U, Iraklis and Rangers. You were in. We had two squads, didn't we? We had the A and a B squad. Were you part of that B squad mainly?
I was. Yeah, I was. No way. I was going to be part of the A squad because Frank Arrock was looking after that one. But Eddie Thompson had the B squad, and I took part in that. It was some great memories there. Playing at Melbourne MCG against Iraklis and Nottingham Forest, and those days it was really good.
Yeah. 84. You scored a lot of goals. What happened there in the league? Even more than when
he
you were a player of the
goals.
I know
no,
he's
no,
yeah,
Peter,
but the,
Peter Orr, loves
almost
scoring goals.
Almost double the amount of goals you scored in 82. Just the
What happens is Manfred Shaver threw me up front.
Played you up front, yeah.
We had a bit of a, I don't know, we were short up front or whatever. And then,
you had a crisis.
Yeah, we had a bit of a crisis, and I got up front and started banging a few goals.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't rate Manfred enough. I always thought he was a very special guy, and very sad that we lost him, I think, a little while ago. But he did a really good thing for you, because that was a buoyant period in your career.
Look, Manfred was a good human being. He was a good man. We had a great squad at the time, and we played really good football. Tactics, there wasn't much tactics. There was really, the ability of players was, we just went out and played and just, razzle dazzle. And it was a really, really good season.
But you could. But the thing was, you had a side that could do it.
Yeah, we did. We had a side that could do it. Look, Manfred didn't have to say much. All he had to do was get us fit and just motivate the boys. At the end of the day, everyone knew his job, and we just went and played. And it was a great, great year, 84. I think we made the final. I think we won our conference. There were two conferences there. We played against South Melbourne in the final over two legs, and I think South Melbourne beat us. They won the two league thing. But it was, we had a great squad.
Was Alan Davidson playing for South Melbourne in those days?
He was one of my best teammates in the national team. He was another great player, and we're still good friends till this day.
And he went overseas, and so did you for a little while. Tell us about your stint in Greece and how that came about.
I went to Greece. Look, I had a few opportunities to go to Greece, I didn't really go early. I should have gone in 81, 82. I went to Olympiacos, 81. I decided to come back to Australia. 82, I went to Panathinaikos. They wanted me to sign. I decided to come back to Australia to play for the national team. And then I decided to go back in 85 and with Larissa.
Yep.
Before I went, I had a major injury with a medial ligament operation. Things didn't work out for me. I hardly played.
and I was back. I was back home quite early. But look, Greek football at the time was very clicky. I think it still is.
I think it still is.
I chose the wrong team. There was not much direction back then, really, from managers or people that really could sort of, tell me, look, don't go to this team. They've got, 8 midfielders. What are you doing down there?
What was the Greek media like, Peter, at that time?
Look, Greek media was okay. Look, they're okay, but look, they've got favourites. In Greece, unfortunately, the media is influenced by certain players. I think certain players there was a lot of favours to a lot of local players. They preferred the local players than somebody that came from Australia.
At the end of the day, you're a foreigner, whether you were Greek-born or whatever. You're a foreigner.
I was a Greek-born, yet I felt like a stranger in the country that I was born. It was a weird feeling, and they classified me as a Xenol, which was a outsider.
That was always going to be the case. Yeah.
Peter, were you an outsider when you came back and played for Apia Leichhardt?
Well, I came back and played for Olympic again, and then look, they decided they didn't want, they had excess midfielders. Me and Estavilla were sort of let go, and last minute I had to find a team, and lucky that Rally picked me up in '87 with Apia. And, that's the reason I left Olympic, not because I chose to, it's because I had to.
Well, you left to the right club at the right time. 87 was a great year for Apia. What are your memories of that year?
Well, we went undefeated for 23 or 24 games. I think that record is still held today. And that was a great, great year again. Rally was a great mentor, great coach for me, and we had some great players. Charlie Yankos was in that side, Arna Batonia, Tony Bazzano.
Rod Brown and Gary Ward, did you have that?
Wardy.
Terry Butler, Peter Dredenick.
Wall-to-wall superstars.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good, that's a pretty deep squad if you think about it. There were very few positions that didn't have a quality player in them.
Yeah, look, the quality of that squad was incredible. We competed. It was like we had to play. If you played in the first 11, you had to play well to keep your place in that team. You know what I mean? Like, you're competing. The competition for players was immense. Yep. And I think that's what the drive behind, this team, doing so well, because everyone wanted to keep their position. There was an international, Polish international on the bench as a midfield. And I felt the pressure. I had to play week in, week out, because otherwise Rally's tough. He doesn't, if you're not playing well, he'll pull you off. there was no favours there.
Were you working as well as playing football?
Yes. I did that all my life. I had to work and play football, which was really, really difficult for us.
That's incredible. People don't appreciate and understand what the involvement really was and what was required of you guys. You're training how many days a week?
We would train, 3, maybe 4 sometimes. And then we'd play on the weekend, but we had to work. It was hard. These days, the boys have got it easy. They've got it really, really easy. They're earning a lot of money We probably trained just as much as what they would train, and we were sort of semi-pros, because I remember, Monday nights after the game, I'd be doing the bay run. Tuesday I'd be training. Wednesday I'd be doing something else. It was like every day you'd be doing something. But look, that's what you do. When you love something, that's what you do. You keep doing it.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. The thing I want to know is, you were having a fantastic run at Apia. Why move, or when did you move?
Well, 87, I was poached by Marconi, Tony Labozzetta.
Tony Labozzetta came calling, did he?
He wanted, obviously, to a bit of success at Marconi way. because, you know, I was pretty much, you know, every year, either Olympic or, you know, RPL or whatever, I was, you know, I was in the finals and we'd be winning championships. So, you know, he saw something in me and we went, I went to Marconi 88. We won the comp that year again. That first year with Bertie Mariani, again, another super squad. Competition for places everywhere. Tony Henderson, you know, Frank Farina, Slaven Ostevski, Jerry Gomez, David Lowy, you know, many, many great players.
All right, opposition players. Now, we mentioned George McMillan. That was that was one example of hard man, but you would have come across a few. Who of the other teams or, you know, players were difficult to play against that you really struggled with or you enjoyed playing against?
Yeah. Look, I can recall George McMillan because, you know, look, he wasn't much of a footballer. He was just a kicker. So
Harsh.
Oh, he's gonna come and kick me now.
I don't really care, Georgie. You're a nice bloke or whatever. But look,
I've got shin pads. It's all right. I've got shin pads.
He was limited. He was limited. I express again. He was limited.
Technically correct.
Yes.
But someone who wasn't Peter was Slatko Nastevsky.
Slatko Nastevsky, one of the best strikers I've ever played with. Great footballer, great football mind. We gelled. You know, a lot of through balls. I played him. He scored a lot of goals. You know, Frankie Farina, another guy. You know, some great players that, you know, you put a through ball and they would finish. So, yeah, it was good to play against with players in that calibre. But Slaven Ostevski was certainly a standout.
Yeah, but at the opposition, other than Georgie, was there any others who were decent defensive midfielders or guys that you come up against that are memorable or you had running battles with for years that, you know, like that you quite look forward to?
Look, Jimmy Camp was another. He was another kicker at Sydney City.
Where were the referees, Peter? Who were the referees?
Those days. They let a lot go. The game was different. The game was a lot different than today. Today is it's a lot. You know, I wish I played today. It was you got protection back in the day. You know, people would go through you. It was tough periods. And the thing is, you know, if you don't get up, you're classified as a softy. You know what I mean? You take the hard knocks. You had to. You had no choice.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. All right.
But, you know, playing against guys like, you know, Slucker, another one, Ojarkov, Oscar Crino against these guys, it was a pleasure to play against guys
like
that.
What was your opinion of Zarko Ojarkov? Give me, in two words.
Brilliant.
That's two words.
That's
right.
Two words.
Brilliant. He was twice as brilliant as most people. Let me tell you.
Oh, he was terrific.
And same
Oscar Crino, right? Oscar Crino.
Brilliant. I mean, you appreciate footballers like that because that's what football's all about. You know, footballers are there to create and technique and distribute. That's what football. That's what we. That's what football's all about. They're the real footballers.
All right. Speaking of real footballers, and I'm going to continue with word association, and I'm ready to wind you right up now and get you going. I'm going to use two surnames and then you're going to go for the next 10 minutes and let loose, right? Antonis and Petrados. Now, you had something to do with these boys as young fellas. Take it over from here.
Yeah, look, I both of those boys, I had something to do with them. Look, as a midfielder, you know, the dads would be calling me to help with their kids. And I would pass on my expertise.
Much like Raul Branco did with you.
Yes, exactly. And, yeah. You know, it was my obligation. When Terry Antonis' dad came up to me and he said to me, I admired you as a midfielder and I want my son to be just like you. And I showed him 100 times the videos of you playing and scoring goals or whatever.
Yeah.
And I want you to help me with my boy and, you know, what can you do and say to him, whatever. That, you know, that's what I did. And I tried to help him. And look, he's a great footballer. Now he's matured a lot. He's a complete player these days. He's got a right foot. He's got a left foot. He can score goals. He's up and down. He's a worker. He gives 100% every game. you know, I'm very proud of him, the way he's going, and you know, he's had some knockbacks, but he's you know, he's there, you know, he loves the game, and he's you know, he's doing the best he can. And look, the same with Dimmy. Dimmy, I grew up with his dad. You know, we used to be next door neighbours. You know, his dad Angelo, I was only with him yesterday. And same thing. You know, I coached him at one stage in the under 13s at St George. There, he used to come and join us. You know, again, I passed on my my.
Could you see they had something different about them? Could you see that they had that X factor that would allow them to grow and really be good footballers?
Look, they had, you know, both of them had the passion and the drive to succeed. Both of them had an incredible drive. They love the game. They both love the game. And, you know, people that love the game like that, you just want to help them. That's what people do. That's what I do anyway. And I saw that in them. And it's a shame, you know, I didn't think I only thought it was the right thing to do, and to give them, you know, my opinion on things and how to do things, and make them better footballers. You know, so far they're doing pretty good, and I wish them all the best. And I do enjoy when I watch them play, and I take a lot of pride in watching them play.
And so you should. Well done. So when a young fella or any fella now, not just those boys, their dad or their mum. Brings them to you. What's the very first main ingredient you're looking for before you'll actually work with them? The number one.
Look, I think it's, you know, when you look somebody in the eyes and you can see that how much fire they've got, you know, how much fire they've got within, and how much they want it. And I think that's the number one thing.
You want to see hunger.
I want to see that fire. You can see it in their eyes. Mm. You can see it. You can feel it. When you talk to them and the way they look at you, you know, and they want to learn. They, you know, they sponge off you, but that the way they look at you is, you can see their fire within. They want to do it. They want to make it. They want to succeed. It's a good. That's my first impressions, and then I know I'm not wasting my time.
Ah, that's good. Now, you're pretty vocal on social media, and any media, I guess, when you get the opportunity, about coaching, about the way we should be coaching our younger players. You've got strong opinions on how this should be done and what sort of players we should be developing. What's your thoughts, one, on the curriculum, and then two, on how, if you're not in favour of it, what's the alternative and how do we go about it?
Well, look, first of all, I want to say, I get out and say what I say. Yep. I don't want to sit on the fence.
No, you never do.
I want to say, and I say it, because I want the game to become better.
Yeah, we want to develop players, right? World-class players.
Whatever way, we want to say it as it is. There's too many people that just sit on the fence politically to be correct.
Yep.
I'm not that type. Okay. I'm not looking for a job.
Bravo.
I want Australian soccer to be better and how we can produce better players. So I want to clear that first. Now, when you have myself, or Oscar Crino, or all these great players, technique players, footballers, midfielders, that, you know, were good in the last third, don't you think they should basically ask us what we think and how the game and how we should develop these players?
Yes.
No one asks ever. The curriculum, well, that's not complete. It's not even finished, because the chapter about individual play is not even written.
Now, there's a lot of chapters not written, including mentor, assist, brother, dad.
It doesn't cater for that. No. When somebody takes some players on, that individual flair, well, guess what? They don't want to know about that player. But guess what? Australia, that's what we need.
Yeah.
We need the excitement, the X factor, the player that can take a player on. We Azani came on the scene,
yep,
and everyone's going crazy. Well, guess what? Guess what if we had another two or three Azanis playing for the national team? Well, guess what? We might have done a lot better than that World Cup. But that's what we need in Australia. We need to encourage the individual. We need to encourage someone with flair. No one told me when I was on the park, listen, Cat, get rid of the ball.
I would tell them,
let me play. I'll play what I see.
Express yourself, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
play what you see. Too many coaches are trying to be mechanical with players. Players need to be let go. Let them play.
Okay, so that's the theory. Eh? Let the ball players play and let them have their head. Let them express themselves. So you're now in charge of the FFA coaching fraternity. You're the number one man. What's the first two, three things that you're going to do in order?
Well, big job. The first thing I would do is basically try to get coaches that understand the skillful, technical footballer.
Yeah.
We need to change the strategy. All these teams in Asia, they're all
technically advanced, yeah.
More technically advanced. They need to get coaches that understand, not only demonstrate, they understand that ability. There's too many coaches in the system that really don't understand or can't coach.
In other words, they've got the theory, but they haven't got the rest.
They don't. That's exactly right. We've got a lot of coaches. I think we've got a lot of coaches. I think the mentality needs to change. We need to bring these people in the game. And I'm not talking about myself. I'm 58 years old now. I might be finished. There might be people that are more mobile and whatever. But this is the mentality. We need to bring people that, the emphasis is on skill and technique all over the park. It's not just the midfield and strikers. Mm. Even defenders. Defenders need to have the first touch. Look at the Japanese or the Thailand guys or whatever. Yep. Everyone is comfortable on the ball in every position, and we need to we need to have that. We need to have players that are comfortable on the ball. It's not like a hot potato. You need to be able to shield it. You need to be comfortable to hold the ball, not be afraid to hold the ball. And that we need coaches to encourage these players how to do things, how to refining. I speak about refining. We need coaches to refine players to become better players. There is so much ability in players. We've got a lot of talent, but they're just the little bits that are missing, in either finishing, as far as strikers, there's certain strikers that could help our strikers become better strikers.
Yeah.
But we don't have that. We don't encourage that.
We don't embrace it.
You mentioned Con Bucciano.
Yeah.
Con's a great strike of a ball, great technique footballer. I'm pretty sure a lot of A-League players or a lot of national team players today could sponge off, Con's techniques.
Mm.
That's what I believe in.
Peter Catholis, can I just say, your technique wasn't too bad. Scored a goal in every six games, and after, I suppose, 20 years of playing football at the highest level, you finished in the top five of the highest scoring midfielders all time in this country. That's not a bad rap, is it?
Look, I had to. It's a pretty good rap. Thanks for bringing it up, George. Because what happens these days, they forget. People forget very early. But your job as a midfielder is to obviously create and score goals. It's not just there to carry the water. They're going to run up and down.
No, good point. No, we and on this program, that's the whole point of it. Is so we haven't forgotten, but we're making sure others don't forget. Don't worry about that.
Look, guys, I appreciate it that you're having me on, and I appreciate that we could be able to talk about it. And hopefully, somebody's going to listen, and somebody obviously might change things. But that's what Australian football is. I believe it's. And it's probably one of its lowest points. And we really, really need to really knuckle down and get it sorted quickly.
We agree.
We're falling behind big time.
We agree.
Yeah, unlike the FFA, mate, you send us a letter, we're going to answer it.
We'll answer it.
All right, mate?
Yes, I'm pretty sure you guys will.
It's
Peter been
Catholis,
a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been an absolute joy. Allowing us to reminisce with you, to take us back to those times when you played with some of the biggest and best clubs in the country. St George, Sydney Olympic, Apia, Leichhardt, Marconi. You played with Melita Eagles as well, and I think there was even one game for Sydney United. Was that when you got injured and finished the career?
No, mate, believe it or not, I was a guest for Sydney United versus Dynamo Zagreb. I think they played a friendly game, but I was a guest for Sydney United. Which, so I completed George, completed the whole all the Sydney teams. I got to play for all the Sydney teams.
You ticked them all off. Well done, young fella. Well done.
Oh, great stuff, mate.
It's been our pleasure to have you on, Pete. Thank you for accepting the invitation, and we hope to talk to you again somewhere down the track, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. All the best. Thank you.
Peter Katholis on the Pioneers.
Butsianis, no call! Score!
Salamidis for Cole. Cole on the run. Shoots. 2-0.
Lazanowski with the free kick. Launches a rocket!
Trimboli, what vision!
Math blasts.
Yes! That's it!
Miljevic.
Beautiful ball!
Here's Bozanic. They haven't! They haven't! They might have won it!
The Pioneers with George Danikian and George Kotsanis on FNR, Football Nation Radio.